Welcome to the Smart Family Podcast, where we want to help you love being home. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rob Meter and Tony Newhoff.
Hi there, and welcome to the Smart Family Podcast. My name is Tony Newhoff, and I'll be your host for today's episode. I want to give you a heads up. This is a PG-13 warning. Our episode today is about physical intimacy. And so if you have some littles that you want to clear out of the listening space, this is your opportunity. A while back, I had a conversation with the DiLorenzos. I believe that was episode 60. It was Tony and Elisa DiLorenzo, and they talked about the six pillars of intimacy. And in that episode, they issued a seven-day sex challenge. That's right. You heard it. 7 days where you have sex daily for 7 days. And so I thought I'd check in with you. Did you take them up on their challenge? And if not, I just ask you, why not? Today's guest highlights three of the issues or obstacles that sometimes arise and interfere with a couple's full enjoyment of their sex life. One of them being pain that sometimes occurs, another one being mismatch in levels of desire. Somebody wants sex all the time, and for the other person, that's too much. And then what do you do when shame is showing up somehow in your sex life? You can find solutions, but it requires you to take a step. And so today's conversation, I hope, will prompt you to just take that step, that next step that will make your sex life the gift that it's intended to be. So today's guest is Amy Latta. She's a psychotherapist who practices in Ontario. She's had years of experience, not only as a psychotherapist, but also as a sex therapist. And so she has words of wisdom to share with us. And I'd just like to introduce her to you. You can find her at amylatta.com. And there'll be more details in this episode. But without any further ado, let's jump into my conversation with Amy Latta. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Tony. Thanks for having me.
I'm just so thrilled that you would take the time to join me today. I'm wanting us, all of us, to get to know you a bit better. And so just wondering if you can tell us a bit about your background and your family, your personal life, but also what led you to the professional work that you're doing right now?
Certainly. My name's Amy Latta, and I'm a proud mother of two young girls who are very vivacious and independent like their mother. And as well, I'm married to my university sweetheart, Stephen, who is a strong pillar in our marriage, just keeping me as a grounded as the kite that I am, that kind of flies around and loves to create new things and very colorful in my life. But he continues to be the stake in the ground for our relationship. But professionally, I am a registered psychotherapist here in Ontario. And my clinical practice, I see people virtually from all across Ontario. And what I focus mainly on is relationship and sex therapy, as well as working with people through parenting and family issues, and as well as career counseling and work-life balance.
If you were to isolate one thing that you would like our listeners to walk away with today, just one message, what would that be?
It would be that change can actually start with you, and that you actually can be a catalyst for change in your relationship and to the people that are surrounding you.
It's tempting in a marriage to sit back and, maybe hold back on trusting, to try to kind of play it safe, so to speak, and not extend yourself and put yourself out there and take a risk. But you're saying the opposite, that, yeah, we're better off if we can assume that personal responsibility for change.
Yeah, we sometimes think that we need everyone on board, or we need our partner to change first before we can change, or the relationship will get better if both of us agree that the relationship needs to get better. And even when it comes to therapy, some people are afraid to go to therapy alone because, well, it's a couple issue. And yes, outcomes could be better if both of them would go to therapy. But I do think that it can start with you making simple, small changes in the way that you're approaching the relationship, how you're interacting, how you're even understanding yourself, that can create the change in the world that you want to see.
Mm-hmm. So wise. In my practice, I practiced as a family lawyer for several years. I found that often there were two reasons that people would present with if they were seeking a divorce. Often it was financial issues, parenting issues. Combined with parenting, it would be also communication, like communicating about the parenting issues was breaking down. They would tell me at some point that they hadn't had sex for years. And so my question for you in particular is, why do couples end up in this place where they stop having sex, but they don't do anything about it?
I think that it takes a while for them to realize that sex has completely vanished from their relationship. They've been having problems in their sex life for anywhere between 3 to 7 years before they're reaching out to be able to have some form of help in their relationship. And I think that even speaks to them being, I don't think it's a resistance, but more in terms of hoping that it's going to get better. Let's just wait and see. Maybe things will turn around. Maybe once he starts working less, maybe if we start going on more dates, it will get better. And then when things don't, then I think it's at that point that they're like, okay, something has to change. And unfortunately, sometimes that is separation and divorce.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So 3 to 7 years is a long period of time. And it makes me wonder whether, you know, I think traditionally, if you wound the clock back like 25 years, we would say there was a stigma attached to people going for therapy. And over these number of years, I think that has gotten better. I don't think we're all the way there, but it's better than it was in the past. But I'm curious about the stigma for sex therapy in particular. Like, do you think that people feel more resistance to seeking sex therapy versus other kinds of therapy? Maybe, you know, therapy for anxiety or therapy for depression. What do you think?
I definitely think there's a stigma around accessing sex therapy. And I think that's because it's hard to talk about sex. You know, it's not something that is actively talked about in our communities. And it's not that natural over the dinner table conversation.
Yes.
And I think sexuality is very vulnerable and a very private space to many people, right? And so to welcome in somebody who, yes, clinically has specialized in sex therapy, there is still a big gap for them to cognitively jump over to say, yes, I need to involve somebody who can help us, but might also, we might not see any change too, right? Mm-hmm. So there's not only the emotional investment, the financial investment, but it's also the reality of, you know, is this actually going to get any better? And I think, you know, for me as a therapist, sometimes they've gone through multiple other therapists or they've seen other clinicians, and they're almost exhausted by the time they're getting to me, because they're like, well, I've tried so many other things. What makes this any different? Or I'm just tired of trying to get help and it doesn't get better. So by the time they're actually coming to see me to do sex therapy, they're feeling that exhaustion. They're feeling, you know, a little bit of, is this worth my time anymore?
Let's talk about maybe the most common problems or pitfalls that people come to you for. I would imagine that you probably see patterns or recurrent themes, and that there's also somewhat of a pattern or theme in the solutions that you're pointing people towards. I'm wondering if you can give us your like top three or top five.
Number one is people coming for having pain in sex. So whether that be for intercourse or during foreplay, they're experiencing some form of pain. And while typically this is women, we do see some men who do experience pain. And so it's navigating what that looks like and being able to understand what that pain looks like for that individual. Mm-hmm. I'd say the second piece is what we call desire discrepancies. Also can be like low libido, high libido, low sex drive, high sex drive.
Yes, sure.
It can interchange based on the person is another big one that we see. And then finally, is shame around sex and sexuality. Mm. And, you know, being able to reconcile what one was maybe taught in childhood or in younger years, or maybe what they've seen in media, whether in movies or TV, and being able to reconcile that with what they expect and what they think sex should look like is a hard one for them to navigate.
Right. Okay. So let's take those three in order in terms of the solutions, or maybe it's an array of solutions. I'm not sure, Amy. But starting with number one, it was pain during intercourse or foreplay. How can you help people with that?
Certainly. So a big thing that we talk about in sex therapy is the cycle of pain. So it's one of the biggest strategies to be able to help a person when they are experiencing pain in sex is being able to map them in the cycle of pain, which can involve them having a reinforced feedback loop where they are actually experiencing pain or maybe forcing themselves through sex and then experiencing pain, knowing that it's going to be coming the next time they engage in sex. Because for a lot of people who are having pain in sex, they want to have sex with their partner because they love the person or they want to be intimate. And so they find themselves pushing through it in order to do that obligation or that duty for the relationship. But then they find themselves, again, stuck in the cycle of knowing that the pain is coming, knowing that it's going to be happening again. And then they're anticipating it, anticipating that pain to come. And then they're starting to brace themselves or even feeling more tense in their body, which actually increases their pain receptors.
Right. Yes. I know I'm not on this particular subject, but you know, I've worked with a physiotherapist who's brilliant at the top of his field here in Ontario. He always talks about how, you know, a part that is injured sets up a kind of alarm system. And sometimes that alarm system actually overdoes it. So, you know, you get pain signals that are firing off, even though there isn't an injury that your brain needs to protect. Then it's sort of I think I like the way you put it as a cycle. It's a cycle of an alarm system that you anticipate, your brain focuses on it. Are there ways that people can break that cycle?
So if they notice that they are starting to become anxious or anticipating pain, they then can actually use that space to actually say to themselves, you know, I need to relax my body. I need to be able to be more present with myself, to even be able to come into a more centered space for them to feel like they can communicate with their partner around their anxieties, can actually help for them to not have to feel like they have to screech through a yellow light at us, but knowing that they're going to hit a red light, essentially.
Sure.
Right?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And so I work with people around, we don't want to be in that red zone of pain. We don't want to feel like, you know, we have to be pushing through it. So how can we stay in a good, healthy green space?
Right. And I would imagine in some cases, people do need to see a medical doctor as well.
Yes. Yeah. If you are experiencing pain in sex, you should be speaking to your family doctor about that in order to get a proper diagnosis and physical exam.
So let's move on to number two. I think number two was the mismatched sexual desire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This one is very difficult and is seen very prominent in our in my practice. And I think some of that, it comes down to even about how we communicate what our desires at and how we are actually navigating that conversation with our partner. Sometimes when we say to our partner, I'm not feeling like I'm wanting to have sex, that can feel like a huge rejection to the other person. And so not only do we have the desire issue, but we also have this feelings of rejection and almost a rupture in the relationship. So there's this feedback between not only does it there's a sex issue, but then there also then creates a relationship issue between the couple as well.
Right.
One of the solutions that I would suggest is for you to be able to present your conversation with your partner in a way that is more in I statements. So like, I am feeling like when you pursue me, I feel very overwhelmed because I'm not feeling that desire, rather than utilizing the you statements in terms of like, you always pursue me, you never leave me alone, I'm never feeling in the mood, right? So being able to really be able to format it in a way that is more about yourself and what you're feeling and what you're experiencing versus around criticizing or blaming your partner in the situation.
One of our former guests, Dr. Mike Seitzma, talked about this mismatch in desire. And he said that when it comes right down to it, when he asked people, you know, what frequency of sex would you like, say, per week? And he might say, well, you know, 3 to 4 times would be nice. She might say like 2 to 3 times. And when it comes right down to it, they're not really that far apart. And so do you find that couples can usually work out some, you know, some solution to this mismatch?
I think a big part of it is being able to not see the problem in each other, but it is more a problem that the two of you need to unite together in solving. And that is a very strong narrative approach to being able to separate ourselves from the issue or the problem that we're experiencing and looking at it straight on versus feeling like it's inside of us. And I think that if couples can be able to see that our sex life is something that we want to address together and we want to find solutions to that actually benefit both of us, I think that that's a better approach than going at it in a more us, you versus me mentality.
Do you find that a little bit more creativity or a sort of better expanded view of what may qualify as sex, you know, can that help sometimes if people can loosen up and say, hey, you know, I can be here for you. I'm not really in the mood right now, but, you know, maybe there's some way we can make this work.
Yeah. Two concepts that I'd love to present right now is shifting from performative sex, which is this feeling of an obligation or a duty that I have to have sex a certain way, and moving more towards a co-creative view of sex. So how can we create a sense of safety and vulnerability in our sex life that actually serves us together? And so even that suggestion where you're saying about one partner giving permission and consent to saying, I'm willing to serve you, whether that be with foreplay or being able to allow their partner to orgasm, but maybe they aren't going to be, is a very co-creative way of expanding their repertoire of what sex, I use quotations as that sex can be, right? Yeah, so that's a big piece, right? Because I think what's been modeled for us and has been implemented into our culture is that sex should look a certain way, or sex is always intercourse, or my favorite one is when I ask couples about when do we know that sex is done? And typically the answer is, well, when the man orgasms. Well, does that have to be the answer to what sex can be. I think that if couples are able to look at, you know, we are going to create a new definition of what sex looks like for us, they're going to enter into more co-creative space with one another.
Hmm. And so number three, I think you were saying that there's shame-based problems. I'm just wondering if you can point us in the direction of some ways to attack that problem.
I was talking about shame and sex. I was mentioning around like childhood messaging or things that have happened to them. And sometimes this has to do with even sexual trauma or some type of childhood abuse that actually has influenced the way that they understand sex and how they experience their sexuality. And sometimes that also is just around the messaging. So maybe there's been emotional or psychological abuse of what sex should be or what it can be. So for some people, it is feeling a lot of shame around not waiting until marriage, or maybe it's about them not feeling like they were a good enough sexual partner for their last partner, and now here they are having anxieties about having sex. So one strategy is certainly getting a therapist and being able to process around those narratives that you may be holding over yourself, and being able to unpack those pieces and being able to find new narratives.
Are there any particular like books or movies, any resources that you recommend for people around this whole issue of, you know, ditching or dealing with shame?
Certainly, there's two resources, books that actually come to mind. For males, there is a book called The Truth About Men, Sex, and Pleasure, which is called The New Male Sexuality by Bernie Zeingold. He writes a really great book that has different perspectives on male sexuality and is very up to date in terms of issues.
That seems like a tricky last name. Any chance you could spell it?
Definitely. Zeilbergeld.
Okay. Thank
you.
And
it's The New Male Sexuality. And for women, a book that I recommend highly to women is Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. Sorry about that. A little bit challenged there. I'll spell her last name for her too. N-A-G-O-S-K-I. And this book really reiterates the foundational issues around female sexuality and how you can actually feel more empowered in your femininity and sexuality.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. During the pandemic, I don't know if you heard about this, Amy, but I certainly heard and read statistics and stories about couples who were breaking up because they just couldn't divide their domestic activities, childcare, chores, appointments. It was running them into conflict. I'm sure being in close quarters didn't help either. But this particular issue of, you know, being able to divide the work of raising a family, have you noticed that as a factor in couples having a healthy sex life? What do you think?
Especially during the pandemic, I think it definitely had an impact. There was them being in close quarters, having to work from home and being able to take care of children was certainly an impact to not only their relationship, but also their sex life. I do think that there is a direct connection because people were really feeling like they weren't having enough time to miss one another.
Yes.
And I think further to that too, I think that there is a connection between how we view our person or spouse or partner in our life, how they're interacting with the household chores and how they're interacting with our children, which really entices our own desire towards them, right? We have to be able to break out of this mentality that sex is just about the physical and just about our genitalia. And sex is really about how our brain is interpreting desire and how it's interpreting arousal in how we see the person functioning in their day-to-day life and how they're interacting and also speaking to us too, right? That has a huge impact on how we desire the person and whether or not we actually want to vulnerably give a part of ourselves sexually to that person.
Mm-hmm. Can you say more about that, about communication? Let's talk to the couple who is just really haven't been in the best place, snarky with each other or sarcastic. You know, there's a lot of, I would say, negative overtones as opposed to positivity. How do you advise people to move away from that space?
I think it's coming to a collective agreement that we have to make a change in our relationship. And I was speaking about this earlier, where seeing that our communication issue is a we issue, not a her issue or his issue. Mm. And being able to enter into times where we are going to choose to work on our communication. And there's exercises and strategies that can assist couples to actually be able to enhance their communication styles and being able to increase the way that they are also receiving and hearing information too. Because that's a big part about communication, is not only what we say, but also repeating back what we're hearing. Because I could be saying one statement to my partner and they could be listening and they could be hearing in a completely different way and interpreting it in a way that is a very negative way. And if I ask them to say it back to me, I then at least am able to correct and be able to guide them back to what I'm more intentionally meaning.
Mm, right. Is it possible to briefly maybe describe what one of those exercises would be?
Definitely. So one exercise would be a reflective listening exercise. So I spoke earlier about utilizing more I statements versus you statements. So I am feeling right now that this, or I am feeling that we blank, fill in the blank. A reflective listening exercise would be where you decide to, with your partner, decide to sit and listen to the other person for anywhere between 3 to 5 minutes. And the other person is able to express what is on their heart or what they're feeling in the relationship. And this can be very hard because as we're listening to the other person, we most likely are starting to think of rebuttals and denial or deflection, and we want to answer the person back. But it's really important to stay in a place of hearing and being compassionate towards our partner so that we can actually be able to say back to them what I'm hearing. So after that 3 to 5 minutes is finished, it would be important for you then to take the time to say, okay, let me say back to you what I heard you say.
Yes.
This is not the time for you to be like, okay, for the last 3 minutes, you're completely wrong. This is actually what happened. That's not the time for this. This is the time to actually be able to say, what I heard you saying during that time was that you are feeling, and maybe it is that your partner's feeling hurt because you did a certain something, or maybe your partner's feeling lonely because you're working overtime. By doing this exercise, it strengthens your ability to be empathetic towards your partner, and it strengthens your ability to actually be able to hear them and not be combating and thinking of a rebuttal. And it also is able to really add compassion to your relationship. And I would suggest for both people to be able to do that exercise in the same setting.
Yeah, you're reminding me of an exercise that a counselor told me about and this was Dr. Craig Brannon had communicated this idea to me, that when you debrief or when you're talking about an issue, you can sort of envision it as you're adding slices to a pie. So let's say you have a pie plate and it's empty. that you are contributing, you know, a story, maybe the way you saw it. So that's a slice of the pie. It exists. It's there. You're not going to take it away by having a different opinion. And then you have a chance to talk and you add a slice to the pie. And, you know, then maybe it goes back and forth and you talk about, you know, how you felt or how you felt the last time this happened. That becomes a slice of the pie. And you're contributing in a way that gives you a whole picture. And you have to probably stay at it for a while to create the whole picture, to create that whole pie. So I thought analogy. That was helpful imagery.
That imagery is so beautiful. I love that. Thank you, Joni.
Yeah, thank you, Craig. So in my experience, people struggle to have conversations about sex, struggle to have conversations about conflict, but really struggle to have conversations about sensitive issues. And by sensitive, I'm thinking of maybe mental health, a mental health struggle, or weight gain, or something that just feels like it's, oh, we're walking on eggshells if we talk about this. How do you coach your clients to raise a sensitive issue with their spouse?
Mm-hmm. I think that being able to bring up a sensitive topic, we need to realize that we will always have a fantasy about how that other person's going to react or respond. The fantasy would be that the person is going to willingly accept what we're saying and agree with us. Or maybe the fantasy is that it could be also a negative one too, right? Like where the person is going to completely lose it and be upset, right? I think that there is merit to recognizing that when we're able to bring these things to our partner, we're able to say them in a way that is compassionate and empathetic to the person, but also realizing that the person it may be brand new information for them and that they have the right to actually have time to process and be able to understand what that information is for that person. And so one way that you can practically be able to tell your partner something that is sensitive, like around the issues that you're raising, is being able to present the information to the person and not expecting an immediate response right there in that moment from your partner. It's actually saying to them, hey, this is the information I need to present to you. I'm going to give you some time to process around this and let's touch base on this again tomorrow. Or maybe it's in a week's time. Maybe your partner needs some time to process around that. I think the conflict and the conflictual space tends to happen when we want that immediate affirmation that everything is okay right there in that moment. But that's really hard when we're bringing up sensitive issue topics. We need to give them the space to process.
Right. And what about if your spouse just essentially shuts down the conversation?
This is a hard one too, right? And I think I come back to where at the beginning about like things that about how you can actually be the change that you want to see. I think that can be a very hard space for you to sit in, and it would be really important for you to get the support that you need, whether it be from a friend or from a clinician in some way.
You might need to go to therapy yourself just because your spouse isn't going to have that conversation.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also recognizing that there may not be a change. Again, coming back to that fantasy part of it, right? It would be lovely for your partner to be understanding and agree and be amicable, but that may not be the reality that you sit in. And so being able to get the help that you need in order to still see change for yourself. And maybe that will bring some change in your relationship, but you won't know that in that moment.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes trying to force something is counterproductive.
Correct.
It can make us run in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. Amy, if people want to connect with you and find you, how would they do that?
I have a website. It's amylatta.com. My name is spelled differently, so please take note. It's A-M-I-E, and my last name, L-A-T-T-A.com. And you can also find me at Amy Latta Psychotherapy on Instagram.
Wonderful. Well, Amy, we're so grateful you came and joined us today for this conversation. It's been a joy. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Well, that is it for my conversation with Amy Latta. Just in case you missed the book recommendations, I wanted to mention them again. So she talked about The New Male Sexuality by Bernie Zilbergeld. That's Zilbergeld. And For Women's Sexuality, Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski, N-A-G-O-S-K-I. So I hope today's episode was helpful for you and that you have a takeaway, that you've picked out one next step for you in your sex life. And hey, we love to have these conversations at the Smart Family Podcast. We love to talk about whatever it is that you're dealing with, whether it be in your marriage, in your parenting, with your babies, your middle schoolers, your teenagers. Please reach out either on socials. We're Smart Family Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and smartfamilypodcast.com online. So drop us a line if there's a topic that you would love us to cover or an expert that you have in mind who you think would be a great fit for Smart Family Podcast. And hey, if you've listened to our episodes and you have not yet left us a review, would you please do that? We would appreciate it so much, and it would help bring these conversations to other parents like you, or married people like you, who can use a lift. So that's it for today's episode. I just want to thank you so much for joining us. We love you. We would love to hear from you, and we're committed to providing these conversations with experts to help you love being home.